Let's read Nahum chapter 1. The burden of Nineveh, the book of the vision of Nahum, the Elkoshite. God is jealous and the Lord revengeth. The Lord revengeth and is furious. The Lord will take vengeance on his adversaries, and he reserveth wrath for his enemies. The Lord is slow to anger and great in power, and will not at all acquit the wicked. The Lord hath his way in the whirlwind and in the storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. He rebuketh the sea and maketh it dry, and drieth up all the rivers. Bashan languisheth, Carmel and the flower of Lebanon languisheth. The mountains quake at him, the hills melt, and the earth is burned at his presence, yea, the world and all that dwell therein. Who can stand before his indignation? And who can abide in the fierceness of his anger? His fury is poured out like fire, and the rocks are thrown down by him. The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that trust in him. That with an overrunning flood he will make an utter end of the place thereof, and darkness shall pursue his enemies. What do ye imagine against the Lord? He will make an utter end. Affliction shall not rise up the second time. For while they be folded together as thorns, and while they are drunken as drunkards, they shall be devoured as stubble, fully dry. There is one come out of thee that imagineth evil against the Lord, a wicked counsellor. Thus saith the Lord, though they be quiet, and likewise many, yet thus shall they be cut down when he shall pass through. Though I have afflicted thee, I will afflict thee no more. For now will I break his yoke from off thee, and will burst thy bonds in sunder. And the Lord hath given a commandment concerning thee, that no more of thy name be sown. Out of the house of thy gods will I cut off the graven image and the molten image, and will make thy grave, for thou art vile. Behold, upon the mountains the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace. O Judah, keep thy solemn feasts, perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no more pass through thee. He is utterly cut off. Amen. And may God add his blessing to the reading and the hearing of his holy word. Now then, it's a difficult prophecy to understand. It's spoken against Nineveh. Now we remember that some time before, Nineveh had a preacher called Jonah, a very reluctant preacher, but he had to go there, and he spoke to them, and they repented and turned. But by the time Nahum was writing this, Nineveh was a great world power and had forsaken the gospel that it once had. The burden of Nineveh. Now, before we look at this first chapter, and I think it's going to be next week, we need to get something of the background. And there's a lot of background in the book of Kings regarding the Assyrians. Now Assyria was a very small country, near about where Iran is now, and it grew into a very powerful empire from small beginnings. It was one of the two major kingdoms in the history of the far Middle East or the Near East. It was Assyria and Babylon. About 1200 BC, it had a small empire, which was about the size of the kingdom of Iran today, but it fell away from that power that she once showed. But some centuries afterwards, maybe about two centuries afterwards, in the 800s BC, it began to conquer small neighboring countries, little kingdoms, and slowly but surely she ruled in the end from a part of Iran in the far east of Iran to Egypt in the west. And she was known as a cruel oppressor, no mercy shown. And as we look through the book of Kings, 2 Kings especially, we see that she was a nuisance, a thorn in the flesh to the people of God, until she fell in the year 612 BC, 612 BC. Now then, she began troubling Israel about the year 770 BC. And we see in 2 Kings chapter 15, if you want to follow, it's a bit technical always, hope it's not too boring, but 2 Kings chapter 19, we see that this man Menahem was the king of Israel and reigned 10 years in Samaria. He did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, and he departed not all his days from the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. And Pul, the king of Assyria, came up against the land, and Menahem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver, that his hand might be with him to confirm the kingdom in his hand. 1,000 talents of silver was a lot of money to find. So what did Menahem do? He exacted the money of Israel, even of all the mighty men of wealth, of each man 50 shekels of silver to give to the king of Assyria. So in a sense, he was paying off the king of Assyria, not to conquer him and not to make him lose his power in the land. But it must have been very trying for the poorer people of God to have to give money to pay this tax. So that's 19 and 20 there. If you turn down to go down to verse 29, in the 250th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Pekah, the son of Remaliah, began to reign over Israel in Samaria, and reigned 20 years. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. In the days of Pekah, king of Israel, came Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, and took Ijon and Abelbeth Mahacha and Janoah and Kadesh and Hazor and Gilead and Galilee, all the land of Naphtali, and carried them captive to Assyria. Now that was, again, God using the Assyrians, you see, to punish Israel, carry them away. Now then, about this time, in 2 Kings 17, I think, very bitty, I'm afraid, 2 Kings 17, 1 to 3, in the 12th year of Ahaz, king of Judah, began Hoshea, the son of Elah, to reign in Samaria over Israel 9 years. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, but not as the kings of Israel that were before him. Against him came up Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, and Hoshea became his servant and gave him presents. But in the meantime, Hoshea was in a cahoots with the king of Egypt, and he thought he'd be all right, and brought no present to the king of Assyria, as he had done year by year. Therefore the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. And then the king of Assyria came up throughout all the land and went up to Samaria and besieged it 3 years. And then they took Samaria and carried them away, and then Israel, for her sins, was again in captivity. But they didn't seem to learn the lesson at all. And that was in about, let me see now, 740 BC. Let me look at verse 5 there. King of Assyria came up here, and then they got carried away. So it was, in verse 7, sorry, of chapter 17, that the children of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, which had brought them up out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and had feared other gods, and walked in the statutes of the heathen. That was the terrible situation in Israel. Now then, we turn up to chapter 18, sorry. About 4 years later, Hezekiah began to reign. Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, king of Judah, began to reign. 25 years old was he when he began to reign, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. And in verse 3, and he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that David his father did. He removed the high places, and brake the images, and cut down the groves, and brake in pieces the brazen serpent that Moses had made. For unto those days the children of Israel did burn incense to it, and he called it Nehushtan. Now then, this man, you see, Hezekiah came on the throne, and he overturned all this false religion, all this idolatry. He removed the high places, break the images, and even the brazen serpent that was used of God through Moses to heal the sickness of the children of Israel after they'd been bitten by serpents. They worshipped that. And there's always this tendency in the hearts of humans to love idolatry. And we have to guard against it, I fear, in these dark days. We can make an idol out of anything. The human heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. And because it's desperately wicked, it can make an idol out of anything and turn us away from worshipping and loving the one true God. Now then, yeah, so he trusted in the Lord God of Israel, and so that after him was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor any that were before him. Quite a praise for Hezekiah in this chapter. The Lord was with him, in verse 7, and he prospered wheresoever he went forth. And he rebelled against the king of Assyria and served him not. He smote the Philistines. In verse 13 of chapter 18, now in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, come up against all the fenced cities of Judah and took them. And Hezekiah sent to the king of Assyria to Lachish, saying, I have offended, return from me that which thou puttest on me, I will bear. And the king of Assyria appointed unto Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. And we see Hezekiah caving in, more or less, gave him all the silver that was found in the house of the Lord and in the treasures of the king's house. And this is from a good king. And then we see that the king of Assyria comes up, verse 19. He sent Tartan and Rabsarais and Rahab Shakenah from Lachish to King Hezekiah with a great host against Jerusalem. They came up with a huge army. And they came and stood by the conduit of the upper pool, which is in the highway of the fuller's field. And when they had called to the king, they came out to them Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah, the son of Asaph, the recorder. And Rabshakeh, the Assyrian guy, he said unto them, speak ye now to Hezekiah, thus saith the great king, the king of Assyria, what confidence is this wherein thou trustest? Thou sayest, and they are vain words, I have counsel and strength for war. Now on whom dost thou trust that thou rebellest against me? See the pride of the king of Assyria. He was sure that he could conquer Judah and give Hezekiah a bit of a mauling. Now in chapter 19, that when Hezekiah heard all this news from his messengers, he rent his clothes and covered himself with sackcloth and went into the house of the Lord. That is, he did the right thing. And they sent He sent Eliakim over to Isaiah the prophet and said unto him, thus saith Hezekiah, this day is a day of trouble and of rebuke and blasphemy, for the children are come to the birth and there is not strength to bring forth. It may be, he was not presumptuous, you see, it may be that the Lord thy God will hear all the words of Rabshakeh, whom the king of Assyria his master hath sent to reproach the living God, and will reprove the words which the Lord thy God hath heard. Wherefore lift up thy prayer for the remnant that are left. So they came to Isaiah, and Isaiah said to them, thus shall he say to your master, that is King Hezekiah, thus saith the Lord, be not afraid of the words which thou hast heard, with which the servants of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me. Behold, I will send a blast upon him, and he shall hear a rumour, and shall return to his own land, and I will cause him to fall by the sword. That was the word of the Lord for Hezekiah. After Hezekiah had confessed his great need. And then if we go to verse 35, they pray. What happens? The prayer was heard. Listen to verse 35. Look at it. Stare at it. And it came to pass that night that the angel of the Lord went out and smote in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. 185,000 men died. When they arose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpses. So Sennacherib, king of the Assyria, departed and went and returned and dwelt at Nineveh. And it came to pass, as he was worshipping in the house of Nisroch his god, that Adram Melech and Sharezah his son smote him with a sword, and they escaped into the land of Armenia. See, when Hezekiah prayed, how God answered that prayer. There is nothing that is too hard for the Lord when his people commit themselves to prayer. Now we go over to chapter 20 for a minute. A quick look at something a bit different. We see in verse 12, Hezekiah had been ill. God lengthened his life by 15 years, and at that time, Berodach Baladan, the son of Baladan, the king of Babylon, sent letters and presents unto Hezekiah when he had heard that Hezekiah had been sick. So this guy in Babylon heard Hezekiah was sick, and he sent nice letters to him showing his concern. And Hezekiah fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. No doubt it was a bit of, political expediency. He saw that Assyria was a great nation. Assyria had come up against him once. And he thought, well, if I can become friendly with the king of Babylon, he will help me in any trouble that will arise in the future. And they came, these people, the messengers of the king came up, and Hezekiah hearkened to them and showed them all the house of his precious things, the silver and the gold, and so on and so forth. Then Isaiah the prophet came to Hezekiah and said unto him, what said these men, and from whence came they unto thee? And he said, they are from a far country, even from Babylon. And Isaiah said, well, what have you shown them? And Isaiah said, hear the word of the Lord, behold, the days come, that all that is in thine house, and that is and that which thy fathers have laid up in store unto this day, shall be carried away into Babylon. Nothing shall be left, saith the Lord. See what Hezekiah had done. He'd forgotten the goodness of God in the past. So easy to forget the goodness of God and the power of God in the past. And he trusted in men. And the psalmist tells us that it's a vain thing to trust in horses and the sons of men, in whom there is none aid. Right, we'll dip over to chapter 21. After Hezekiah died, his son Manasseh came on the throne. He was 12 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 55 years in Jerusalem. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, after the abominations of the heathen, whom the Lord cast out before the children of Israel. And he built up again the high places which Hezekiah his father had destroyed, and reared up altars for Baal, and made a grove, as did Ahab king of Israel, and worshipped all the host of heaven, and served them. Now we have no idea at what stage of his reign that Manasseh did these things. May have been a bit later on, and maybe he might have seen it as being something expedient to do, that if he took up the religion of Assyria, he might be left alone. And so he forced the nation back into idolatry. Maybe just to please his overlords. And it was a terrible time to be living. I think if you went up to 1 Chronicles 33. I'm going the wrong way. It's forward in the Bible. 1 Chronicles 33. And we have an interesting little story there. 1 Chronicles 33. Can't be. 2 Chronicles 33, maybe. Yeah, thank you for the help. 33, and then verses 10 to 13. And the king of Assyria took, in verse 10, you see, and the Lord spake to Manasseh and to his people, but they would not hearken. Wherefore the Lord brought upon them the captains of the host of the king of Assyria, which took Manasseh among the thorns and bound him with fetters and carried him to Babylon. And when he was in affliction, he sought the Lord his God and humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers. And he prayed unto him, and he was entreated of him and heard his supplication. And brought him again to Jerusalem and to his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that the Lord, he was God. What an incredible picture of the grace of God. Here's this man, all these years reigning in Jerusalem, setting up idolatrous places, encouraging people to worship for false gods. And yet God had mercy upon him. Maybe the prayers of his father had come up before God, and God had answered him. Manasseh was saved, but Hezekiah never saw it. Let me go back to Kings, sorry about that. It's a story that we should never, ever, ever forget. God is merciful. Right. Now then, where are we now? Chapter 20, I think. And then, of course, after Manasseh, Josiah began to reign. And about this time, really, Assyria was beginning to lose its grip. And Babylon was gaining strength. Until in the end, in the year 612, Assyria fell. It was used of God then for about 200 years. Used of God for about 200 years to punish Israel and Judah. She was so powerful. She was so cruel. And the people must have wished that a day would come when these people would go away. And we see, of course, Isaiah speaking of the Assyrians, that they were so cruel. They were cruel, and they were much crueler than they should have been against God's own people. And God was working it out so that the Assyrian Empire would fall. And this is where we come to Nahum, Sorry about all that, but I think it's useful to have that sort of background to realize that when Nahum was prophesying, probably in the time of Manasseh, those who were believers in the Lord God, who were seeking to keep the covenant of God, those people must have been going through terrible, terrible times at home with all this idolatry around them. They just couldn't see a way out of it. This Manasseh guy, he's so powerful, he just is such a nuisance to the people of Judah. He's making them sin. How can we stop him? What can stop him? And then, of course, you had this Assyrian Empire that was so powerful. How can we be free from the fear of this nation that has such a stronghold on our part of the world? Now, we don't know when Nahum wrote this prophecy. Sometime between 720 and 640 BC, when, as I said, the Assyrian Empire and Manasseh were at the height of their powers. And he opens the book with a burden of Nineveh. He had a burden that this empire would fall. Nineveh, of course, the capital of Assyria. And the next sentence, the book of the vision of Nahum, the Elkoshite. Nowhere else is a prophet or the words of a prophet introduced as being in a book. Now, tradition has it, according to some, that Nahum wrote this prophecy in a document. We call it a book today. And it was circulating amongst the believers about the fall of the Assyrian Empire. They probably had to be very careful who they gave the book to. But they said, some authorities say that this was the case. And if they had it, well, this book would be an encouragement to them, prophesying that this great empire, Assyria, would fall, would collapse. Seemed impossible. But Nahum means consolation and vengeance. And that's what this book is. It's full of consolation for the people of God. You can look at verse 7, you see. The Lord is good, the stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that trust in him. And of course, he's a God of vengeance, as we see in chapter 2. God is jealous, and the Lord revengeth. The Lord revengeth. Twice he emphasizes, not just once, but twice. Look, get this man, get this people. The Lord revengeth, the Lord revengeth, and is furious. The Lord will take vengeance on his adversaries, and he reserveth wrath for his enemy. Just close with this, that Nahum is described as being Nahum the Elkoshite. Now, there was a place called Elkosh in Galilee, and many of the older authors reckon that he lived in that area. And he lived in Elkosh, which was near to a more famous town or city, Capernaum. And they reckon that Capernaum got its name from Nahum. Capernaum, Nahum. Okay, just something that was said. But the newer authors tend to say that it was not the case, because Israel was carried away into captivity to Assyria at the time. But it's not impossible that a few people remained when Judah was carried away, the poorer people, those whom the power of Babylon at that time could keep control of, were left to tend to the flocks and so on, and the crops. So it's quite possible that he might have been in Galilee, in Elkosh, near Capernaum. The newer, more modern people tend to say that it was somewhere near Mosul in Iraq. And of course we have the words of the Pharisees, don't we? Did ever a prophet arise in Galilee? Look and see. Well, this may have been one. It's also thought that Jonah was from there, as well as Micah and a couple of others. So we don't know for sure, but they could well have been. Well, I'll just leave it there and trust that you will read Nahum. So next week I'll say, how many of you have read Nahum this week? And then just read it with that background that Israel has sinned against God. And God was using Assyria to bring them to their senses. And of course they brought Manasseh to his senses. And we don't know who else may have been brought to his or her senses. Well, we'll just close this portion by singing in Psalm 62.